Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I'll do these and I'll do say a few things myself. Oh. Can you please explain the please forgive me in Ho'oponopono? Who is asking for forgiveness and for what? Well, when you're actually doing that mantra and working with it, you know, a lot of those kind of questions kind of reveal themselves to you over time. But I will kind of give you a little Vedanta unfoldment of what it is, and I think in kind of a new agey way that different Hawaiian healers see it this way too, but just in a little bit differently. And we talked a little bit, I think, in one of the classes recently. So say, in terms of the prarabdha karma, this particular life, and realizing that this life that we have now has many preceding lives, like infinite number. And so the people and the people, animals, all beings that we find ourselves in contact with in this life, even from a distance, somebody passing on the street, there is some karma there. There's some karma because there's a connection just by the mere fact that we're glancing at that person, you know, or that they're walking next to us. So it may not be much of a karma where I actually am having a closeness or an exchange with the person, but nevertheless, are in our karma, either from past relationships or something that's happening now, but in the maybe 20 years ago or whatever, there is some we have some relationship with all beings that we meet, that we come into contact with. And that's because the power of the karma isn't random, and the people's karma is not random. Ishwara is not random. So everyone has a meaningful place. So that's the first thing, is understanding that. And so now, with that understanding, say there's someone, first of all, we'll go this first of all, there's somebody in your karma, in your prarabdha karma, that you have a very painful relationship with, for a variety of different reasons, even, I mean, who knows why, but it's painful, and it's, the person is either hostile to you, or is close in your family, and they don't love you, or, you know, I mean, say you have a child or something, and that child is not your type, so to speak, and that has a good old teenage hostile relationship that causes the parents a lot of pain. I mean, most of us have caused our parents quite a bit of pain. You know? I'm certainly guilty of that also, you know. But there's also people in your workplace, you know, people in your life, or say you have a boss that it's a contentious relationship, whatever. There is karma there that may not have anything to do with this birth. It can have something to do with a previous birth. Now, again, so that's that. Those are things that really have intimately to do with you, and your intimate karma is coming together, and now you have kind of an intimate negative relationship or painful relationship with this person. Okay. If you take responsibility for the pain in that relationship as just being something shared between the two of you because of past karmas. So for us, that there is past karmas is still part of the vision, actually. If there's reincarnation, there's past karmas. If there's reincarnation, there's past, you were with these everybody in different ways from beginningless time. And so in this particular birth, these are your people that you're connected with, both positively in a neutral way and negatively. And even further removed for you, let's say in the story of this kind of respected, or I would say this Hawaiian healer, he looks at, like when he went to, I think it was Arizona or New Mexico, to, they called him there in order to try to help the inmates, the prison inmates, in a very prison for violent crimes. And it was just building up, so the whole prison was getting ready to explode. So they called him in to do the work, to do this work. And so he went, I told you this, he went into a hotel room, and they gave him the charts of all of these people. And from his vision, or from our vision even, those people are connected. All of them. They're connected because here he is with them. So there's got to be a connection. And the connection is not of this life, because he hasn't seen them. He didn't know anything about them. But how he would look at it is he would go into himself, his psyche, you know, and find that person in there, in a sense, that pain in there, in himself. Because in any kind of karmic connection, there is a connection between the two psyches. And so the hurt of that person is not totally separate from you. And so you can do this type of saying these mantras in such a way that you're finding that pain in yourself. You know, and then saying these things like, I love you and I'm sorry and please forgive me. And how I look at that, and then thank you, which just kind of completes it. you know, completes, but that it's like a completed fact. So that completed fact of the thank you is there. But when if I do it, when I what I see there is that is to have a connection with someone that can hurt you, by the mere fact that they can hurt you, there's some sort of love there. Otherwise, they're just a person that has these issues and they're very violent and whatnot. But there's no connection, really, that is obvious to you. But at some time there was. Sometime there was. And even here, when you say, I love you, I always think of that person as a child. And that person, who that person really is. You know, and then, because then I can say that and I can mean it, because how can we not love a child? And so there was a time when that person was not hurt and was not damaged. And then when I say, I'm so sorry, I mean, I'm sorry that I couldn't be there for you to help you when all of that hurt was taking place. And please forgive me. When I say that, it's if the person is really difficult for me, because whatever our karma is, I won't just say, you know, I'm so sorry, but please forgive me that I was not able to be, to hold you, to be big enough to hold you even now. Because if you're with the child, with that child, of course you're so sorry that they went through all of that. That's a very real feeling, you know. And I will feel, especially if there's still an estrangement, you know, I will feel that, you know, please forgive me that at whatever time I wasn't big enough to embrace you and give you those things that you need that would have saved you from having this happen. They say, you know, for a child, you only need one person. It doesn't really have to be the parent. You need one person who loves you, who cares about you. That's enough for a child to be well, to grow up and be well. But if that one person isn't there, then it's very difficult, you know, for the child to be able to manage that much abuse, that much lack of love. And so these things I'm sharing with you, they kind of come naturally. You kind of find it in yourself, you know. But it does have to do with taking kind of responsibility, because this person is in your life, you know. And so you do have a connection with them. And it would have been, I wish I would have been there, you know, when all of this abuse was taking place. I'm so sorry that it has taken place. And please forgive me if I could have been there and I wasn't there. You know, if I could have been there and helped and I didn't, please forgive me for that. You know, these are the things that a child or person needs to hear, and they've been so abused. They need to know that they're loved in a real way, you know, and that what has happened to them, you're so sorry because it caused so much pain, you know. And then please forgive me if I wasn't able to help you at that time. Which very much could be the case, because now you're in a very difficult relationship and I wasn't able to be there. Maybe you were even in that very difficult place when I could have been there if I was able to. So it's not, I'm not blaming myself or anybody else. I'm just saying, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. I just was not able to do it. And so that releases the pain that the two of you seem to be sharing. And then when you're completed with that, then you could say, you know, thank you for taking me back, or for understanding, because I love you and I wish I would have been able to help. So those are very big, beautiful things that changes your insights. And the more you do these kind of things, you probably had the experience as you're doing this, you know, you get a lot of insights, but also all of the people that, you know, you ever could have done a better job, they start popping up, you know, or all the different people that have, you've had a hurtful relationship, either from their, on their end. It's usually both people are hurting each other, not even wanting to, it's just they are, you know. But now say, even if this Hawaiian healer that has this story that's often told, he, of course, he didn't know these people in this life, but he just understands the interconnectedness of all things, and so now he's been asked to come and help these people, so he sees himself as being related to each and every one of these people, and he finds that connectedness somewhere, you know, when you kind of go into your psyche, you find it somehow. And then to that connected part that both of you, if you know, like lock and key or two sides, the psyche that's shared, this part of the psyche shared by two people. And just that Hiranyagarbha way, the total subtle body way. Then as he really went there and spent that time with this type of a mantra. Is it the mantra? The mantra is the words, but the words have to be filled with the feeling of those words. You know, because it's not just words, it's the feeling, the understanding, and that feeling, that being understood, being loved, and then the apology, because that shouldn't have happened, you know. You say, well, it happened because of their karma. Yeah. But for a child, it shouldn't have happened. Whatever their past karmas were, we're not going to say, oh, you have some bad karma there, so you're getting what you deserve. You don't feel that way at all. You feel this child has been terribly, terribly wounded. And there's abuse can kind of be generational and go back and back and back. But you're being brought in a different way, as someone who is really doing this work and releasing, continuing to release this painful karma. And the other, you feel yourself changing in that, and the other person changes. Whether they're not even know what's going on, but it's something that's happening on a deeper level. And of course, what's causing the people, any of us, to really act out in negative ways or in, you know, angry, hateful ways or whatever, that is picked up. That is a defense against a pain that we don't know how to handle. Most people, especially just regular people going to work and whatever and trying to raise their family and all this, they don't know any of this. They just have an unconscious with it, which they don't even know that they have, for the majority, I think. They have an unconscious. They don't know that they have an unconscious. And so therefore, when something is triggered, to them it's not a trigger, it's you doing something. You're doing something bad to me. They don't have any knowledge to not project that onto the trigger, you know, and so then it's all very, very real. But say, for us, that's really not the case, which is a beautiful thing. It means that we can accept that and metabolize it in what's coming our way, metabolize it in many different ways that we've taught in terms of inner child work and how to be with people that you have an unhappy relationship with, and now this one we're looking at. We know these things, and so we can practice them in a way that not only frees the other person but frees me also from whatever I'm holding. If you're pushing or need to push away or escape somebody, or you know you don't want to be in their presence, we have some work to do. Which is good. Of course, we have work to do. We all have work to do. Okay, but this becomes evident when we're afraid of somebody. Afraid means not even violently. We're afraid of them that they're going to somehow, their very presence, their very existence, is going to take away our happiness. And so then we can have this catastrophic thinking. You know that they're going to take away my shanti, they're going to take away my peace, they're going to take away my well-being just by their presence. You know? That isn't true. You know? So Swamiji had to teach me that for a long time. That's not true. You just keep, he'd say this like, this is so simple, you know. Just keep everybody outside. Keep everybody outside. Don't take them in like that, you know. You know. And everybody, that was one thing. Everybody has, you know, give everybody their own space. They have a right to their own space. They have a right to how they feel and how they're thinking, you know. Don't think it's not always about you. Let them be. Let them be. And it took me I think it took me quite a while. I don't mean months, I mean several years. to accomplish that to whatever degree that I've accomplished that. But it's a wonderful thing to accomplish, because then you're free inside. You know, you can let the people be. He also said, not everybody has to like you. You know, that's a tall order. Some people like you, some people don't like you. You have to live with that fact. And it's, you know, it's how it is. If you're walking around in the world that, okay, now here I come. Everybody has to like me or I'm going to be really unhappy. Okay. So yeah, you're going to be really unhappy. You know. So those are always really kind of good lessons from the important things to just gaining the strength to let people be as they are and not need them to be a certain way or if you have certain feelings about you and all of this, because that's unrealistic. It's totally impractical, you know. Learning how to let people be is very practical, you know, and you can just be with them as they are. You don't require them to be a particular way. That's your buddhi keeps gaining more and more and more strength the more that you're able to do that. I found that. Another thing I've found that is really it kind of strengthening is that when your relationship with someone, whoever it may be, and it creates what Swamiji will call pressure. You feel pressured inside, you know, and you want to talk to them or talk to somebody else about it, just something to relieve this pressure that you're holding. You know, so somebody needs to be told, or maybe you want to talk with the person who's creating the pressure. But here you are pressured to do something, say something. It's like a pressure valve. And what is amazing is just don't do that. Hold off and just sit quietly, accepting the pressure, just relax. And the pressure, like we did in the meditation today, it's a little different, but the same idea, it will settle. And then you'll be free of the pressure and you'll feel so much stronger. It's like your buddhi has so much strength now just by the mere fact of withstanding that pressure until it resolves. And then when the pressure resolves, then even though you and the other person or whatever had a kind of a fight or whatever it is, or hurt each other's feelings, once the pressure is gone, you're a different person in that relationship. And the two of you, if the other person's not pressured, you can actually talk about it as real people, you know, and how are we going to handle this in the future or whatever, because there's two normal people there. But before, you have two totally abnormal people because they're both pressure cookers and they need to release. So the trick is to say to yourself, you don't need to release. You can just be by yourself for a while and let it settle down. And when it's settled down, you know, then you two can talk together. But the point that for me is so curative and also gives you strength for the next time is not succumbing to the pressure. Just being with it. And watching it dissipate over some time. Your psyche takes care of it. It works it out. You can just relax and kind of see how Ishvara handles that pressure in terms of this upadhi. It's really amazing. And then you see more and more that this, the whole upadhi that you have is a product of infinite, in the infinite intelligence of Ishvara. And there are all kinds of backup systems. You know, there's all these different curative ways of being that will take care of this and take care of that. Just like the physical body, eventually it will die, but it has so many backup systems and so many, you know, things that it will do to try to bring you back to the basic person. Your body is always trying to do that, the prana is doing that, and your mind is doing that. And so to have that kind of awe-inspiring respect for the infinite intelligence of the creation, it's an amazing thing. And then you start to, when you have that kind of patience, you know, you start to really kind of revel in that. Much revel in that much more than acting out and getting in a fight. You know, if you're going to get in a fight of some sort, it's better to sit with yourself until the pressure goes away. And it's a really, really meaningful, beautiful experience. So that's some things about it. I think for this particular one, for me anyway, I get more and more insight every time I do it. It has a lot of depth in it, and you kind of, you'll get little bhagwans, like bhagwan gives you these little insights. Oh, well, that's why you say that word. So that's why that meaningful, and you get a lot from it. At least myself, and I know many other people also.
I wonder if you're saying that our healing heals people that we don't even meet in our life. What I referred to the fact that until today about the Ho'oponopono, I understood that the point of the Prarabdha and the connection, the Prarabdha connection, and for sure the fact that we can forgive also somebody that we don't feel we have to forgive, but for the reason that you unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm still not understanding is, in the case of this man, he didn't have to heal. It was for the prisoners that he was doing the job. So people that he would never meet. So the fact that he was forgiving, or that we are forgiving somebody that we will never meet, does it have any healing effect on the other person that we will never meet? There is like a psychological, invisible, intangible connection with people that we want to meet?
Yeah, good question. He has met them. He has met them because he's been given their file. Right? So that's a huge karma right there. Why has this man been given this guy's file? You know? So now they have met. They may not have met physically, but they are definitely connected. He's been called in to do work with these particular people. So these people are in his karma. Why? Because there they are. That's why. There they are. And so he would look like this, or we would, if we work on it this way. The fact that now he is there with this person, even though he's not physically met them, the person, but still there's the karmic connection, because there's 8 billion people out there, and this handful of people are the ones that he's connected to. And so he'll study their file, you know, and contemplate on them, and he'll find them inside. They'll find some feeling inside that registers as being related. And then he will do this Ho'oponopono with that connection. And then all of those words then are not going to be from him in this life in reference to that person. This is one way of looking at it. If he says, in finding that really child inside that's suffering and now flailing and acting out, he can say, you know, I love you, I love you, I'm so sorry. Because look at how he turned out. He turned out as a criminal in excruciating pain and causing excruciating pain. I'm so sorry. Because that person was also the basic person. They're not born like that, they're the basic person. And things have happened that have destroyed that person. And that destroyed person is flailing, you know, And so he says, I love you, I'm so sorry. You know, please forgive me. Because if any time I could have been supported you, you know, somehow, even because we have some past karma also, somehow there was not that one person that could have been me, that could have made a difference, you know. And so you're not necessarily talking about your culpability or the in this life because you haven't had a physical contact in this life, but we're not just this life, we're many, many, many lives. We have many, many karmic relationships, and some of them are playing out now because the people are in our life. But even those people, those in the prison are in his life. You know, so he owns that. These people are in my life now, and we have some connection somewhere. You don't, unless you're some sort of a psychic or something, you can't go back in time. Oh, I recognize you back there. But you just know the very fact that they're in your life in some form, that there's something, there's some connection there. So he tries to find that connection. And finding that connection, then these words are meaningful. And they're the very words that haven't been said. If these words had been said, if the parents had said that, or the abuser had said that, and taken responsibility and, you know, owned it up, then that person could be okay. But that's often not at all what happens in very serious cases of abuse that causes serious abuse to continue. That doesn't happen. If it does, that's like a rarity, that's a wonderful thing. But no, not usually. Not at all, actually. So there's no, I love you, I'm so, you know, I'm so, I love you, I'm so sorry, you know, if this happened, please forgive me, taking responsibility for the way you failed that person, whatever that may be. And then saying, thank you. When I say the thank you, that's really meaningful to me because I can feel inside of myself that I've been released of something. And so I'm so thankful for that. So the thank you has to do with just thank you for letting this happen. That is releasing not only you, but me. It's a really, it's an incredible thing. I don't know what to say about it, but it really works. It has some tapping into some laws there, some Hiranyagarbha, something that's very, very powerful. So that's a way to look at it. Always, you know, all these relationships that we have, this isn't the first time. We've had many different, all of us have many different relationships with each other. And even to be here in a situation like this, that's amazing. This isn't the only time. most of us don't, I'd say like 99.9% don't remember all of our past connections, but I feel certain that they're there, let alone with anybody that's even passing you on the street. There's a past connection. When you think of infinite number of jivas, why are these particular group born this particular time in this particular place? What are the odds of that? And you've probably had experiences too where I remember you know, especially when I was younger and I would take trips to Europe and things and do this and that and be all over the world. And almost inevitably, I would run into somebody I knew on the other side of the world. We'd cross each other, we'd pass each other in the street and we'd look at each other. How could that be? How could that be? Well, that's karma, you know. And you've probably also experienced the people that you have some sort of a deep connection with, like it could be a familial connection or just a deep, long-lasting friendship or a child, parent, child, mother, or just your partner, where there's a deep sharing, good and bad. The psyche's, you know, the psyche is connected. Well, that person can be on the other side of the world, you know, and if they're mad at you, you feel it. If they're upset, you feel it, you know. If there's something wrong, you feel it. Not as some big announcement, but you feel it. And sometimes you get used to those feelings and you take them seriously. But the connection is so much, you're already connected. The psyche doesn't think, oh, look at how far away she is. You know? There's no distance at all. You know? Especially parent-child. Ooh. You know. It's amazing. But it's not amazing. In light of this vision, it's not amazing at all. So. Anyway, those are just my own personal way of it. It makes sense and works for me. But I think that as you do it yourself, if it's something that is attractive to you at this time, you know, a lot of richness, a lot of things unfold around it. Yeah. And go away. That negative bondage breaks. And then it's not there inside anymore. That's kind of a miraculous, like a siddhi or something, you know. But I've experienced that from this particular thing.
I just wanted to ask something about the pressure that
you
talked about. Because I often feel like when something is heating up and I go to sit with it on my own, then it kind of ends up just on the thought level. I kind of try to find thoughts that are okay around it. So it doesn't really end up with me resolving anything about it. So it's more me looking for a nice thought around it. And then as soon as I get reminded of it, then the whole pressure comes back.
What if you're not looking for a nice thought? What if you're not looking at all? What if, because I think this might, it might be helpful anyway. What if you're just, you feel that pressure, and then you just sit with yourself, and you relax and welcome the pressure? That's all. You don't think about it. You don't try to solve it with your mind. You just let the mind itself, the psyche itself, take care of it without you trying to take care of it, without the buddhi trying to take care of it. You just actually just let the buddhi kind of relax, welcome the pressure and whatever thoughts come around it. Because thoughts will come around it, you know, but that doesn't mean you have to think. They come in their own way. And so you can let the mind kind of handle these things in the way it does, which is really interesting. Not think that you have to have any doership there, you know, or have to figure out how to handle the situation. You just be with it. And maybe for half an hour or 40 minutes or so. I'm not really trying to give a time, but it will change of its own accord. And not even in the form of a solution, more in the form of the pressure dissipating. And then what you thought needed a solution probably doesn't need a solution because you're not upset. And so then you can just do whatever you do with that issue. Maybe you talk to somebody about it, but there's no pressure. There's no buildup inside. And so then you're back to your basic person. Without this pressure that makes you want so badly to get some release from it. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to experiment.
I think I'm looking too much for
your mind's trying to solve the problem.
And then I feel that the pressure instead gets like embodied, that the thoughts are trying to solve it. They don't really reach it.
That's true, they don't. So instead of letting the thoughts just do what they do, let the psyche do what it does in order to solve the problem, which really probably doesn't have much to do with the buddhi's thoughts. It has to do with just what is taking place inside. Learning how to just sit patiently with that Ishwara time. And not take the burden of trying to solve it. Because the problem is probably much deeper than what the buddhi can figure out. It'll figure this out and that, and the problem is still just there, you know. Mm-hmm. Waiting. Yeah. Kind of getting this kind of little toolkit, you know. it makes meditation so wonderful, because there's your own absorption into the self, but there's also the buddhi, the mind, the psyche taking care of itself if you're patient and just have trust in its embodied wisdom that is natural to the upadis, and just see how they do it, you know, and feel the release.
Radha, I have a question. How does it differ, this idea to hold the pressure versus, for example, the benefit that we get from our sharing circles? I find sometimes it feels so nice, and not in a gossip way to mm-hmm. say things, but just to really share what's inside, and I find that gives a nice release.
Yeah, the sharing circles are wonderful, but you're setting up that sharing circle and you share what it is that you have to share.
Well, yeah. Even just between a good friend.
Yeah, but then you're sharing, right? Something, the two of you are sharing. If you use it to share pressure, that kind of sharing is an external kind of holding and allowing you to release the pressure in their presence. So that's something that most of us do. But what most of us don't do, because we don't even know to do, is to sit with and welcome the pressure itself. That's something that we don't know to do. And so it's not that sharing with somebody or talking to a good friend isn't helpful, but this is much more helpful.
So you are saying it's better if we can...
No. I'm not saying that it's better to not do that,
yeah.
But to know how to do this. Because when you know, sometimes you really need your friends, and you want that companionship, and you just want to be held for a while, you know. And that's what I think most of us do that. And so there's nothing negative to say about that at all, because it has its purpose. But what we don't know about is what is it like to just spend a half an hour sitting with that, just being with it, welcoming it, not trying to push it away, and seeing how your psyche handles it itself. So that goes in the toolkit. Mm-hmm. The other one we all do that, and if we're lucky enough to have a friend, that can be very handy and helpful at times, but helps to relieve the pressure. But it doesn't. I don't believe in my personal experience that it gives the psyche a certain amount of strength, you know, that doesn't need to relieve the pressure,
mm-hmm.
and that strength is good, very positive to have that, and you feel the grit, the wonder of it actually. And so you start doing that more, and then you still may share with your friends deeply, but not out of that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that differentiation can be really helpful. You have to experiment. Because these are all, there's hundreds, Swamiji will say, there's countless sadhanas for antakarana shuddhi. Countless. And they're all, you know, some are good for one thing, some are good for another, and so we have all of these things that really help us to get back to, I like this basic person, to just get back to normal, you know, and to gain strength, and to not need to always go to your friends in order to release,
mm-hmm.
but rather that you gain that tremendous strength that you don't feel that way about it anymore. In fact, you like to not release, because it's a deeper internal release. But that's not saying not to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just to understand these differences and to experiment with them, because these are all highly experiential, right? We're dealing in an experiential realm of healing, different healing modalities for the pains that we have accrued. And so you'll find, as all the various things that you've learned, you'll find for myself and others, you know, you'll find the ones that are really very curative or very helpful for you, and you'll pass this on. And the ones that didn't register with you, you won't. You're not going to pass on something or keep doing something that just isn't a good fit. Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome.
Can I ask something?
Sure.
Just clarifying about the Ho'oponopono. I'm thinking whether someone who is in pain has done something to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit with the joint pain, I guess. But do I sit with the child of that person, or is that the best way to heal myself as well?
I think in the Ho'oponopono, though, I'm not sure that the one side is negated. But I think is that you're sitting with the pain that you are actually feeling, not a pain that you think the other person is feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the pain is the same.
Yeah.
So you sit with your own pain, but know that that pain that you've found has a deep connection with the other person. So it's a shared pain. And so you can talk to that shared pain. Yeah. I would try like that, because then you're right into the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's some distance, because it's more of a nama-rupa than what is the actual hurt. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Trying is good, experimenting, finding your way in that interior world. You know, you'll find your way, kind of guide you. And that itself is such a big thing, to have access, to actually be able to go into your unconscious and go into all of your feelings and images and everything, and relate, have a relationship with them. That's the basic person. That is absolutely normal. We've kind of lost that in the last 2 or 3 centuries, actually. It used to be that's natural, very common. They had these inner relationships, and people looked at them also as devatas. Especially in the Greek. Also in the Hindu, all the gods and goddesses, and they're all, and if you mean the Mahabharata and Ramayana, and all of the heroes and heroines, they all have these relationships with all these devatas, and go on walks with them and ask them to come and help, you know. And when you hear all of this, you externalize it all, but we do that internally. If you are beckoning your Ishta Devata, you know, go on a walk with your Ishta Devata, then you're beckoning your Ishta Devata, and you're going on a walk with your Ishta Devata. That's what you're doing, you know. It doesn't have to fly down from outer space and, you know, and then parachute down and go on a walk with us physically. But we're going on a walk with them. Or we're sitting with them, or just letting them be kind of a mentor that takes over this, just indwells in this body for some time. And you can say, how would that myself as this Ishta Devata handle the situation, then you beckon that Ishta Devata and look, see what she does, or see what he does in reference to, in imaginal realm, in reference to that particular situation, because it really invokes tremendous, the most basic person with a punya sharira, you know, without all of the pressures and ignorance and hurts and all of this, just you in a form that is not hurt. And so if you're not hurt, not a hurt person, because we're all hurt person, but you can invoke that, you're not as a hurt person, just as a whole person, how would you handle that difficult relationship? It's beautiful meditation, because you'll see how she handles it, or how he handles it, you know, in that imaginal realm. We're so lucky to even discover, to take seriously these imaginal realms. They just broaden your scope so much. It's amazing. So. I'm going to say one other quick little thing about pass, just pass on. I've passed it on before, but it's just always so wonderful. When you're teaching, say you get an opportunity to teach or give some classes or satsangs or whatever, because you'll all be going into that. Jung has a model of the conscious mind and the unconscious. So just imagine this. Here's the ocean. These are the ocean waves. Okay? And then here's this giant pyramid of the psyche. And it's only this little top piece that's bobbling up on top of the ocean waves. And the rest of the psyche is really the unconscious. And it's also related to the rest of the water. Right? But it is mammoth and huge. And so what that means is, like, for instance, just in terms of this knowledge and the amount of shravana that you've done, the amount of meditation, the amount of study that you've done, the amount that's sitting here in the conscious mind is minuscule to the huge ocean of knowledge that has just been pouring in without any filter. The conscious mind is highly filtered because you could never move. If you were taking in everything that's coming your way, there's no way to move about. It's just too much of an overwhelm. But all of that is going in. And so your conscious mind is processing whatever is there for it to process and work on and all that. But the unconscious is it's doing its thing too. And that's a huge, a continual assimilation that's taking place. Swamiji taught me this once in reference to Sanskrit, studying Sanskrit. You know, because sometimes in my life over these years, I didn't have time to study Sanskrit, and even though I was teaching, I'm used to being with that all the time, and I wasn't able to. And he said, "It's all taking place inside. It's all, you know, assimilating itself inside. Don't worry about it. You'll find your Sanskrit gets better and better and better." And because that was his own experience also. And it does. The psyche is just working away, assimilating the whole thing, putting all of the pieces together, and your Sanskrit keeps improving. And becomes more and more available to you. This knowledge is working away, you know, coming into relationship with all these infinite particles in the psyche, and then, of course, relating with Hiranyagarbha and whatever laws are between the jiva, sukshma, subtle upadi, and the total upadi. So there's all of this is going on underneath. So, and this knowledge rests very lightly inside also because it's not a foreign knowledge. It's you are the subject matter of that knowledge. So then all that knowledge rests very lightly. And Swamiji said, you know, that this teaching itself, when you're teaching this vision, you have to be, I would say Bhagavan has to be very creative because you have to say the same few things over and over in different ways. And so the example is, Swamiji will say, you know, it's like a big elephant dancing on a little stump post. You know, well, how are you going to do that, you know? So, say the same thing over and over. So no, am I saying the same thing over and over? And the answer is yes, over and over and over, with little nuances here and there, seen a little slightly different way, you know, and that's the elephant dancing on the post. So, but that's not exactly the point here. The point is that when you study to present a class, say you're teaching a text or something, you do need to look at the whatever the commentary is to be able to read the verse to make sure you understand what the verse is saying and traditionally what it's saying so you know what that verse is. But then when you go to teach the class, now you've done the work of knowing the Sanskrit or knowing the English and knowing what the verse is unfolding. After that you come to class and then you let Bhagavan deliver the goods through that verse. Because your little mind has this much knowledge and your unconscious has this much, and then there's Ishwara, you know, that includes the whole thing. And so you have to have that shraddha to just let that, you know what the verse says? You have you know, like a billion times more knowledge contained than you have think you do. And so let all of those connections, let Bhagavan give you, all those connections are being made anyway. Just let them take place and try to hold on to the flow that's coming out, so you have some control that you can bring back the unfoldment to where you started. Then it goes out in this way, you bring it back to where it started, you keep bringing it back, you know. But the knowledge that's coming through is really coming through. And so let it come through. As opposed to trying to memorize your talk. That doesn't work. It's really boring and you won't feel happy. You have to let Ishwara give the talk, do the unfoldment. And you've done the basic study of understanding the verse and the context and all of that. Even Swamiji would never, even after how many years of teaching, 60 some years of teaching, not, that's, because he went till 84, so he started in his early 20s. That's a long time. Teaching. He still, before class, he'd read the commentary, he'd read the verses that he was going to do, and even when he was only had like one eye left. So the brahmacharis who were taking care of him would blow up the verse, so they were, here's the verse, it's like in giant size. In the Bhasha, giant size. And then he'd take that to class page after page, you know, because it's not very much on each page. Mm-hmm. He would read all of it, you know. But then he would let that teaching come through, and then the teacher is blessed, the students are blessed, everybody gets what they need in a way that any individual jiva can never do. Oh, this person needs that, you know, that's what's going on in their psyche, and this person needs that. They don't know that. Ishwara knows that, you know. And so when you let go like that, with that shraddha, Bhagavan gives so much, and so much clarity, because actually clarity that is continually taking place in the unconscious starts coming up into the conscious mind as you're giving that knowledge out. And so then what happens is that this knowledge is, this pramana is taking place, and all of us are part of it. As I'm as much part of this knowledge taking place in terms of the vision taking place for the whole Sangha, including me, unless I'm trying to memorize the talk and decide I should say this and then I should say that, and let me have some notes here to follow the notes. No, that's not you're not letting the pramana work. So you have to be brave. Practice that. Swamiji sometimes after class, because all of his classes I think were always amazing, but sometimes even for him they were really amazing. And I remember we'd be walking out, some of the students that were close to him as he was leaving the lecture hall, we'd walk back to his kutir with him, and he would look at one of us and say, oh, wasn't that amazing? Wasn't that amazing talk? I can't believe. It's like an ocean flowing through. And it was amazing. So many insights, so many subtle ways of saying something. You know, just a little bit of a different way of saying it. But that's all Bhagavan. Your mind can't say, oh, let's do something different. What should that be? No. It that does just become, you become an obstruction. You're not, if the study is not an obstruction, gaining that depth, spending years studying and shravanamana and nididhyasana, that's all just like a musician, you know, who can play the guitar so beautifully, and so much beauty will come out of that, but they did have to learn how to play the guitar, you know, and so much music comes out. And so for us, we gain this knowledge and go through Chatra Bodha and all of these things and get all of these pieces together and see it in this way and that way and this way, but then we have that inside, you know. And so then when you're teaching, you just learn how to step out of the way and let all that knowledge come out in whatever way that it does. And then you really feel for yourself and for others that pramana is happening, because it's happening for you too. Yeah. And there's always little new knowledges, little new nuances. It's exciting. And you say, oh, you can see, oh, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. So when you teach, you have your, then you create a satsang. You create satsang. You create your own sangha. Because say you're living somewhere where there's nobody that is a, has any Vedanta or has any, there's no teaching there, whatever. But it doesn't matter if you're doing it, because then that teaching is taking place for yourself and everybody else. The sangha is taking place for yourself and for everybody there. And the teaching is taking place for yourself and everybody is there. So, teaching is good. Don't worry about being all knowledge or anything. And be afraid to say no. I don't know. Swamiji never was. For 40 years, 50, 60 years, 60 years of teaching, something would come up and he wouldn't be sure, and he'd have Nick Sockshot go, can you go get that book? It's in my room. It's a book. And then they'd be poring over the book, the Sanskrit and the Brahmani Upanishad or something. What would they say there? And they'd be looking at it and discussing it and get lost in it, and we'd just all be sitting there quietly in the satsangs they were having this discussion. It was so nice, you know. He doesn't have any, think he's on a Sarvajnaha or something, you know, that everything that's ever been said about Vedanta, of course, knows. Yeah. And another level, you do know, because the vision's very small. You know. Doesn't have a lot of parts to it. So. Om Tat Sat. Let's do Swasti.
Om Swasti Prajapyat Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka Samastha Sukhino Bhavantu Kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yamsho bharahitah brahmana santu nirbhayah om sarvesham swastir bhavatu sarvesham shantir bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah Sarve Santu Niramayah Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityor ma amritangamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om.
Come and have lunch with everybody today. Mm-hmm. See you in a bit.